When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Time to do some holiday baking here on Sabres Live, and long overdue, I might add. Hello, Chris Baker. Welcome into the show on this game day, Buffalo and Montreal.
So clever, Duffer, with the holiday baking. Thanks for having me.
Happy low-hanging items near the oven. That's basically what this is. So how hot is it where you are? Because I'm sure the Sabres are feeling that right now, right? It's unavoidable in the streak that they're in. They desperately need a win in Montreal tonight. We haven't chatted in a while. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you look at tonight, Buffalo, Montreal?
Must win, obviously, I think is kind of the key word here. Stay out of the penalty box, simplify your game. As far as how hot it is, I mean, my seat is always hot, Duffer. You know this, especially with this giant ring light staring at me. But no, I think when you look at the game tonight, evenly matched teams here, really, I think statistically, kind of similarly built. Goaltending will matter as always tonight, but I think I'm kind of curious to see how the team reacts, just given the, you know, hey, what tough times don't last, Duffer. Tough people do. Right? Let's see if this team can dig deep and get themselves moving in a right direction tonight.
It's funny when you put it the way of, you know, similarities in the matchup, statistical standings and otherwise. There have been so many of these matchups in the last 10 games, that where Buffalo was in the first game of this, going well, up against Minnesota, high shot volume, somehow didn't score, lost the game 1-0. But then you look at how they have typically played against some of these teams along the way. They've done well in Toronto. They started well in Toronto, only to have it slip away. They had the unbelievable start against Colorado. They showed comeback resiliency against the Vancouver Canucks to get it to overtime, only to lose. And the coach talked about missed opportunities. It's just statistically, for the entire season so far, as you would expect, everything has now dropped in this 10-game run. But along the way in these 10 games, I was going into it almost all of these matchups going, oh, well, like this is a positive for them. This is where they can win this game. And somehow they have found a way not to win, which is undoubtedly the most frustrating part.
No, it is. It's like Lindy Ruff is kind of conducting an orchestra, right? You need every single piece of the game to come together. And that's why I mentioned goaltending tonight, right? Because that's one of the areas where they've kind of dropped off a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, presumably you're going to see UPL tonight. You got to get those goals saved above expected back to where they were in the first 15, 18 games of the year. Yep. For me tonight, though, you're right. This is a team that's been scoring first more often than last year. Now it's about how do you execute that formula to protect the lead? That's going to be critical. And obviously doing a better job on special teams, both sides of special teams. Those are the keys tonight. That's why I said simplify your game. Mm-hmm. Simplify your game tonight. But no, I think if they can find a way, there's been elements during this 10-game stretch that they've been on that have been encouraging. Mm-hmm. Find a way to dig deep and close out a game. And tonight is the night that they have a really good opportunity.
How much do you think it gets in their head after taking a lead, whether it's a one-goal lead, a two-goal lead like they had in Toronto the other night, the four-goal lead against Colorado. Did that four-goal lead that disappeared, has there been a major negative impact on the group since that moment, do you think? Or are they all just one-offs here with no real correlation to the other?
I think they're bruised from it. I do. Because, you know, it doesn't happen very often. It's very hard historically in the NHL to come back from a two-goal lead, certainly from a three-goal lead. And when you see a four-goal lead evaporate like that, yeah, I think you get some bruises from that. But at the same time, since that Colorado game, they've come out. They come out even on Sunday on a back-to-back, and they get a good start. So I don't want to say that it's, like, totally in their minds, but I think it's in the back of their minds, and they have to just find a way to wash it out. Go out and keep your foot on the gas. If you score first tonight, go out and get another one, and execute that formula. That's going to be a critical part of their success tonight if they do have any success.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the goals against as well. Do you think Luukkonen's numbers have been more a byproduct of just the lack of Rasmus Dahlin, thus the lack of consistent, more familiar partners? Marty and I have had this talk a lot, so I'm hesitant to say it outright that they've had a standard six always in front of Luukkonen and or Levi and or Reimer, but let's start with Dahlin's absence. How much of that is causing the goals against to go up, which right now is up about a third of a goal per game over where it was at the end of last year? And that was certainly, that would be an unexpected statistic, I would say, at this point in the season.
I think Dahlin's absence is being felt more on the offensive side of things, on the power play, him not being at the top of the zone. But no, I think there's a trickle-down effect when you lose a guy that plays 25 minutes a night and you have new defensive partners figuring out a way to communicate when they're on the ice and you're seeing a drop-off there. No, I do think, Duffer, that there are elements to that. When you introduce a Ryan Johnson into your lineup that probably hasn't ever played with Bowen Byram and they're playing over 20 minutes a night, there's going to be some breakdowns there. We saw it in that Detroit game, for example. So no, I do think it's part of it. But the Dahlin thing for me, I mean, he's just kind of a calming presence really in all three zones of the ice. So you're going to feel it in all phases of the game. And I think that's what we're seeing with him.
He's closer. Obviously he was on the ice yesterday. He's been on here at the morning skate, but there's, you know, it's ambiguous at best when trying to read into, well, what's he practicing? Is he doing power play? Is he not? And how much time has he had to really ramp up here to be ready for this? But at the same time,
how much time does he need, right?
Well,
like, you need a full practice.
That's also the thing. It's impossible to know where the conditioning is at. But the other reality is he's been dealing with this since before the season began. So to have managed to have been able to play in all the games prior to the last six and maybe a seventh tonight, he obviously has kept himself in the right place. And I wouldn't have expected a drop off in that regard, but these are tricky situations for the individual and the team to navigate, because once again, now you've got a few days off after this, and then you have Toronto, Boston back-to-back on Friday, Saturday, which are undoubtedly greater challenges theoretically than what Montreal poses to them tonight.
And obviously you're going to need him for at least one of those games this weekend, right? Yeah. So you don't want to rush him back by any means, but at the same time, you can tell just by hearing, Lindy Ruff spoke on the radio this morning, said there's no timetable, and I didn't hear a lot of urgency in trying to get him back, but I think it's because it doesn't need to be said. Like, we need him back right away. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how he looks today, if he's on the ice again. I don't think he's skating with the team. You know, maybe the folks in the back who are monitoring the situation up in Montreal today can help us with that. But no, I mean, Duffer, it's no coincidence that when you lose him and the minutes that he eats up, there's been an impact all over the place. It's critical that they get him back, obviously. So we'll see what happens there.
You mentioned the radio side, WGR Sports Radio 550, and of course here on MSG, Dan and Marty will have the call from Montreal tonight. Marty in for Razor. You are in for Marty at the moment, but you're not wearing a Hamburg Hawks jersey, which is a little surprised. I mean, this is a big Hamburg day for us studio-wise because Pat Collette is going to be alongside for our pregame coverage because I don't want to say the entire night because like if Patty really doesn't like working with me after the pregame, like he's well within his rights to get up and leave. But I'm hopeful that we have a great night with Pat in studio. He obviously just brings, you know what, like passion. Like he cares so much about this city and this team. I know it's tough to walk in and sit down and talk about, you know, where they're at, which is losers of 10 straight. But he will be very eager to just, you know, add what he can on where they're at and how they get out of this. So it's good. It's good Hamburg day for our crew here on Sabres Live. So.
I'm not wearing any Hamburg Hawks gear. I was a West Seneca Wing, which, by the way, was also where Coletta played some youth hockey in his days. But no, you're right, Coletta. If he brings that same passion and energy to the broadcast, it should be a good time that you'll have with him tonight. Mm-hmm. And that's what, again, bringing it back to the team that's going to be playing up in Bell Center tonight. I want to see that passion from the team tonight. I want to see this team get more out of those guys. We talk about digging deep, right? I want to see more from Greenway, more from Zucker. Lindy says you got to rely on your best players. You need to see more from everyone tonight. Mm-hmm. So let's hope that the energy that Pat brings beams out up to Montreal to the broadcast team and down to the team on the ice.
Of course, they had the transaction over the weekend to bring up Levi for the start against Toronto, and that was at the expense of Ryan Johnson. But now, even without a transaction happening yet, certainly with Levi being sent back, and if Dahlin's not ready to go, then like they could swing Ryan Johnson back in here. Just a quick thought based on, you know, your path of following all these prospects, like where do you think Johnson is at now organizationally after this latest cameo at the NHL level?
I think he's ready to take on a bigger role moving forward at the NHL level. If you go back to this year when he was down in the AHL playing for Michael Leone, he was getting all the tough matchups. Mm-hmm. His effort defensively, not just his first effort, second effort, third effort, winning pucks, getting him out quickly. It's helped him really make a transition to the NHL in this most recent sniff that he's gotten. I think he fits right into how the team wants to play. Wins pucks, his feet are so good, quick to identify, and he makes safer plays. If I look at the Sabres defense this year, a lot of times coming out of the zone, maybe some lower percentage plays exiting the zone. Johnson, I think, makes higher percentage plays. Now it's just going to be more comfort level with various defensive partners, whether it's Byram or anyone else. But no, I think that they play faster. I think aesthetically, when you watch the team, and he's on the ice, they play faster. There's an urgency to his game. And by the way, his battle in front of the net, it's been highlighted on the broadcasts. Boxing out seems to be kind of the big word, the buzzword lately. Mm-hmm. He does that. He's gotten stronger and it's made him more effective against NHL level competition.
So they've been carrying 8 defensemen and it's been a challenging year for the group of 6, despite the fact that one thing Marty and I were talking about so much in September was, wow, like, what if they get, like, big offensive years here from Dahlin, Power, and Byram, and they rank really high in scoring by the, like, that's going to help the lower, you know, the bottom 6 group of forwards. They're going to get more points on the ice just by this push. So it was trending that way. Then the Dahlin injury happens, and then you start, and Samuelson, of course, injury gap, injury, you know, return from injury now, some in and out of the lineups for Joki Haru, and I think the same can be said for Bryson, who waited forever to get in, Clifton now, you know, getting a taste of the sidelines, Gilbert in and out. You can see that there hasn't been a ton of consistency here. But what I'm getting at is Lindy basically said it in a similar way to what you just recapped this recent Ryan Johnson run. And that is he will more likely replicate the pace of play in the absence of Dahlin. So that's why you put him with Byram, right? So if you were seeing good things there and Darlene comes back, how much of the wheels start spinning and like, okay, we need to find a way to keep Johnson up. Then we have Darlene Byram, Johnson Power, X, Y, Z, whatever. However many you want to keep on the roster. Do you think this is now part of the discussion as far as like, because it's easy. You can keep parking Ryan down in Rochester without roster repercussions right now. But there's also the urgency that everyone is speaking about right now to get out of this and get on the consistent plane in the right direction.
I don't expect that Lindy Ruff and Kevin Adams are all the way there yet with Ryan Johnson, where they're going to keep him up. For me personally, I do think he's part of the discussion moving forward because of a lot of the things that you just mentioned. And I'll throw Yoki Haru into that too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the problem that you might have with Ryan Johnson is how married is Lindy going to be to having left shot, right shot pairs, right? Mm-hmm. Because that will matter and that'll be a factor in the decision. But I don't think you can matter. I don't think that you can make that the ultimate criteria though. It's about mm-hmm. guys playing together. Johnson's committed to playing the other side. He can play both now. So for me, look, I mean, I said this the first game that he came up, and it was how he responded after that DeBrincat goal, by the way. Mm-hmm. It would have been easy for him to go back to the bench and be like, man, I'm not all the way ready. He rebounded really well, and he played really well. And I think that I was surprised to see his minutes go down. I think he played 14 mm-hmm. in the last game that he played. I think that's why I think there's a sign there to say maybe they're not all the way there yet with
them. Right.
For me, though, I'm ready to throw him right into the conversation because I think that, for example, nothing against Bryson. I think that he plays more of the style that you need to play in the modern day NHL than Bryson can bring at the present moment.
And obviously, based on how the roster construction happened in the summer, there has been an emphasis on physicality. So I knew as soon as I started going down this road in the Johnson discussion that some people would say, well, you can't have Darlene, Byram, Power, and Johnson as your top four. You need more physicality in there. And that may well be true. I'm just wondering where the view, where the perception of Johnson is right now when you contrast him with others who have been on the roster all season. And I don't know. Maybe it's not a super significant topic right now in the grand scheme of things, but I think it's still relevant because of Darlene's absence. And if Rasmus can come back in, and whether it's tonight, whether it's later this week, and feel like he's good to go the rest of the year, like this to me, Bakes, is like such a huge if now. This injury sucks. It is like, there's no timetable on this stuff, right? Like, and so I don't know.
It could linger for a while, Duffer. Yeah. Even if he comes back, yeah. It's going to be there. And that's right. What's concerning. I don't want to even think about the Four Nations, right? Oh, but it's like, yeah. I don't even want him. If this is lingering, I don't want him going anywhere near that team.
Right.
The Four Nations, exactly. Honestly. But like, it's way too early to even go there. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say that there's a silver lining to Darlene being out. And I don't want to overstate Ryan Johnson, how he's looked, because he's mm-hmm. still learning and still getting better. He's making great progress. So, but if he becomes a revelation out of this little stretch when Darlene's been absent, mm-hmm. not a bad thing, because it does also give Kevin Adams more flexibility to make some roster decisions and maybe have more names to talk about with other general managers if he's looking to make some minor tweaks.
And boy, tweaks are what we have seen prior to games, in game, every period, seemingly of late, sending messages to those who are underperforming by taking away ice time, trying to promote players who appear to be having good games to top six status to have a bigger impact on the game. Based on everything you've seen lately, like how would you configure the top six tonight to try to maximize offense in a place where Buffalo has had some really nice offense? I get it. We know where Buffalo and Montreal have been in the standings, but it's been a strange head-to-head series over the last half dozen years. Like Montreal wins often, like they did earlier this year, 7-5 in Buffalo. Sabres have historically fared well at Bell Center. Granted, Their not-so-secret weapon in that process is no longer with the team. That was Jeff Skinner, who had 15 points in his last five games against Montreal. But you know what I'm saying here. Like, how would you organize the group of six to really have that offensive push against Sam Montembeau tonight?
I would construct the lines similarly, if not identical, to how they started the game on Sunday in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I really like Zach Benson up with Tage Thompson and Alex Tuch. Benson's strength of his game, low in the zone, beneath the dots, working and getting to the net. I like that concept where if he's there, it sucks Thompson and Tuch to where he is. Benson, it's so crazy, right? Wayne Gretzky always said, don't go where the puck is, go where it's going to be. Well, if you're playing hockey effectively, right, let's break it down in the very simplest terms. If you're playing hockey the right way, the puck is going to be near the net, right? So you want all those guys to converge. I like that basic concept, though. I like Benson playing with those guys. I've been wanting that personally since the Sabres were in Prague, honestly. When you see, now let's go to the second unit, when you see how Quinn reacted to his five-game sit-down, coming up and shooting the puck with more authority, kind of owning his space a little bit more, I still want to see Quinn get more shots from closer to the net, maybe get into the house more. But I'm probably not tweaking Paterka, Cousins, Quinn.
Okay.
I'm probably staying that way. Kulik, Zucker, Greenway works for me if they go with that. So I know you only asked for top six, but I wanted to, I mean, that leaves me with Kulik.
There's room for the other nine to join the top six. That's the thing right now, right? Like, they don't have two lines rolling that they can bank on offensively. So that's why we've seen all these changes. We were talking just last week about Lindy leaning on Yuri as the number two center, right? Yeah. Cousins got bumped to the wing. Then he got moved down. We've seen Krebs moved up. We have seen almost everybody, save for Malenstein and Obey Kubel, have a bigger an opportunity to have a bigger offensive presence. So this is very relevant to me, especially when Quinn started the way he did last game, but then like the team, most of that offensive push went away. It's also super relevant because you are going to articulate what you've liked about Yuri Kulik's game so far, but we also saw Dylan Cousins incredibly frustrated at the end of last game, and that kind of is symbolic of the challenges that he's had this year. So there's an awful lot to analyze before making these decisions of who plays with whom.
Thing with Cousins on that is I want to see him one more game. I thought he cleared a hurdle the other night when he got into that scrap. Okay. Goes into the back-to-back, very tough matchup in Toronto. I want to at least give him another period and a half to see how he does on that line before maybe moving a Kulik up.
Yep.
To transition to Kulik, if you're comfortable with that. I've liked the confidence that he plays with at his engagement level. I'm very surprised that he's doing it as a centerman as often this early in his NHL career. We've seen so many shooters start off on the wing in the NHL to simplify their lives. He's won faceoffs. His stick is very underrated. His defensive stick, it's active. Stick lifts. He's been pretty good keeping his feet moving in the defensive zone as well as on the forecheck.
That's kind of a big thing that doesn't get talked about
enough. It's huge. Yeah. Huge. Yeah. It's always been an underrated part. I always thought that when we talked about Kulik in his 2 years of development in the AHL, that a lot of when people say, yeah, he scores a lot, but the but was always, oh, his off the puck play. It was always overstated. And I think we're seeing that now. Honestly, did he have his lapses? Yes, young players do.
So do old players.
So do old players, exactly. The one thing I think with Kulik now is that I do think he's got four goals right now. Let's not forget what he's here for. He's a goal scorer. He's here to score goals. I do think because he's always been a volume shooter. His first 2 years in the AHL, he was a 15% shooter success rate. He's at 8% right now. If you can get him to split that difference, it might be ambitious to think he's going to be a 15% shooter in the National Hockey League, but if he's 12 and a half, I think you're getting a pretty good piece. That then you can maybe say, yeah, you know what? This is my second line centerman moving forward. I want to see more goals start to go in, and I think they will as he gets more comfortable.
The most surprising thing for me, I think, this year, when it comes to offense, is Jiri and JJ have both had significant opportunities to impact the power play. Now, JJ had 28 goals last year, but not a lot of power play contribution. So this was already in my head going into the year. It's like, how much is he going to have a role in this? And then by extension, how much are his numbers likely to go up? But then Jiri came up and started playing regularly. And based on all these other circumstances, lack of production, struggling power play, he's getting more time. I'm baffled that neither one of them has carried over the mastery of one-timers from the AHL to the NHL. And I'm curious, as someone who watches the development of players so closely, what are you seeing that is just a miss for both of them in those situations?
Paterka is it's puzzling because lately, anyways, you've seen him have grade A chances, one-timers, that he's like whiffing or missing, fanning on it, blowing the dust off it. I can't explain that because he is getting the chances.
Right.
Kulik, I just think I want him on that first unit. First of all, let's get Darlene back. Right. And yeah, then everything will come together on the power play, or at least
maybe
a little bit more.
I mean,
they've been less than 10% success rate on the PP over these last 10 games. I want to say it's in the 7% range, something like that. Mm-hmm. It can only go up when you get Darlene back, but I would like to see Kulik on his side and maybe flip him, you know, because I think Paterka doesn't maybe need to be there right now. Mm-hmm. Kulik could be the guy.
Yeah.
I think it's just opportunity. But the other thing, though, it's like the one-timer does matter. Teams have done a good job taking the one-timer away from the Sabres power play over the past couple of years. They did it to Thompson. They did it a little bit to Olofsson. Mm-hmm. I think that's why you're seeing Seth Appert and Lindy try different things, different formations, put Tage in a bumper. The biggest thing for me, though, is like when you watched the Toronto game the other night, two guys in front of the net on the power play, one high at the hash marks, one right in front of the goaltender. Sabres, there's still too much white ice in front of the goaltender on the power play. Mm-hmm. I'm saying forget the one-timer. Let's just throw the pucks at the net and crash. Let's get guys there. They're too late to get to the net.
Hard to assess overall, though. I mean, they did score on that early power play, and then they got nothing until the final 13 seconds of the game. So that's, they need more opportunities, first and foremost. But yeah, it's a tricky one to evaluate right now, other than the numbers are the numbers, and they tell you where you are ranking-wise, and their power play ranking is very close to where they are in the standings based on how things have gone here in the last, 10 games. So,
Duffer, I know I didn't fully like or directly answer your question about Paterka and Kulik on the power play, but I think it's really a function of teams are just taking those flanks away because that's what the Sabres.
Do you see either of those guys as good bumper position guys in some way?
I would see probably Paterka better than Kulik in the bumper. Depends on if you're going to use a high zone, a guy that's high or a guy a little more lower.
Yeah.
I like Benson in the bumper. Let's not forget that Benson looked really good in that bumper position in preseason last year when he was 18-year-old.
Yeah.
He just has a knack because I think he's got that processing to not only think he has to shoot, but also kick it low to a different guy on the side of the net. But I digress.
No, never. There's just so much to look at here. And I'll tell you, it's whether it's 5-on-5 or 5-on-4, if anybody just takes a look at how Dallas worked themselves out of a deficit last night against Washington, it was just a couple of beautiful goals, created from passing down low. But the quickness of the passing is what really stood out to me. And you've heard Lindy talk about it. Like, we need to execute quicker. And last night was, and then if you wanted to go to Edmonton and Florida, where there were 11 goals scored. Yeah, but totally different game. Stay with us. You're in for Marty. Marty is going to join us on the back half here of Sabres Live. Lots to get to, including, obviously, Sabres and Canadians tonight. And I want to remind you that you can stay locked in with Sabres all season long with text alerts. Be the first to know about exclusive ticket offers, merch drops, and more. Text Sabres to 956-97 to sign up today. We're back after this. We'll get a little update from Lindy Ruff as well. Stay with us.
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Deck your home with blinds.com.
La 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 la.
DIY or let us install.
La 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 la.
Free design consultation.
Free.
Plus free samples and free shipping.
Free.
Ho, ho, ho! Blinds.com invented a better way to buy custom high-quality window treatments with no showroom mock-ups or waiting around for quotes from pushy salespeople, saving you time and money for the holidays with upfront pricing right on our website.
Go right now to Blinds.com. Satisfaction guaranteed.
Satisfaction guaranteed.
Deck your home this holiday season with Blinds.com. Save up to 40% on select styles, plus a free professional measure. Blinds.com.
Blinds.com.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It's Sabres Live on the fly, baby. We have added, we have made a line change. We pulled the goalie and added a skater.
I'm playing center in this green.
Oh my goodness, what is going on? Welcome in, Marty, from Montreal. You and Dan calling the game tonight. It's great to have a bigger cast here on Sabres Live for the back half hour of our first show of the week. But I know you got stuff for Chris Bates. Well, let me quickly just say, Rasmus Dahlin's not going tonight. Mm-hmm. Jordan Greenway is also very unlikely for tonight. Now, remember, Nick Obey-Kubel was scratched in the game against Toronto, so he could come back in to round out the group of forwards, and obviously still some uncertainty on the blue line. So stay with Sabres Social. Obviously join us for our pregame coverage tonight at 6:30 on MSG for all the details. We're expecting Luukkonen to start in goal. Now, Marty, Bakes, get after it, you two.
Well, I have a question for Bakes, because I know you're talking about the power play and shot location inside the dot, outside the dot, right? And I mean, for me, I look at teams that have success opening up the one-timer, especially like for a guy like Tage. There's a lot of quick puck movement or body movement on the power play, right? What do you prefer? I prefer puck movement, move it quick as opposed to body movement. But what do you like best to be able to open that one-timer, either for Thompson or for Kulik on the one side, or something that's going to get working?
I mean, there's two ways to break down the defense, right? I mean, move the puck or move the bodies. And I watch probably too much European hockey, where you see a lot more motion, especially at the top of the zone with the guys changing off each other, defensemen moving to the wings and overloading and coming back. I'm always in favor of body movement because it makes the defenseman think, makes the opposition think a little bit more than just snapping the puck around. That's my take. But no, what we were talking about, you know, going back to the previous segment with Kulik was, you know, Duffer kept asking me, I wasn't fully answering his question directly about Kulik on the power play. he sets up outside of the dot. And I think the next part of his development on the power play to more effectively use his one-timer, and Marty, you said it, to get better shot angles, is to get him a little bit more inside of that dot. And I think that's kind of one of the things that I'm be looking for here in the next group of games. If he's going to get more power play time, bring him in a little bit more to get more straight shots and better rebounds.
But I feel like, so I look at Jack Quinn's goal against the Toronto Maple Leafs, power play goal. It's a slow pass by Peterka, but a quick, like, executing pass. Like, he went back and across the box. So now Jack gets the puck. He doesn't have to one-time it. He can catch, walk in, get inside the dot, release, right? I think of, well, the Sabres are going to see Patrick Laine tonight. Patrick Laine's first power play goal of the season and then the second power play goal of the season are not one-timer. But the pass is so quick across the box that nobody can get to Laine. He has time to catch, look, step, release. So who can make that pass, or who can make those type of plays right now in the way that they have their personnel on the power play set up to open up Thompson or Kulik a little bit more, because Dahlin's not there. You don't have that cross seam pass. It's becoming difficult to execute on the power play right now. It's not opening that up.
Yeah, no, it is. It's tough, because I think actually Thompson's probably most equipped to make that pass.
Yeah.
Right now,
can't make,
honestly.
Get to himself. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly.
He's not Josh Allen. He's not Josh Allen throwing a touchdown pass and catching a touchdown pass. That can't happen.
But that's why I'm in favor of putting Kulik on the other side opposite Thompson on PP1 more regularly. You give him that look as opposed to Peterka there. But no, that's the answer to the question. Unless you have, like, you know, you change it up and you have your defenseman come down. This is why I think solving the power play is just, let's get Dahlin back. He can leave the top of the box, go down the side to the flank, have everyone rotate around. He could be that guy that snaps a pass across. I still don't know why the Sabres don't go high in the zone, low to the guy on the goal line, and kick it back into the slot. It's such a formulaic power play that is infallible. And I very rarely see it from the Sabres. I'm willing to see that too. I'm willing to try anything.
Right? When they've tried it, it feels like it didn't connect, right? The execution was, again, not at the level you would want it to be. Okay, would you, and Duffer, I'm asking Bakes a bunch of questions here, and I want to pick his brains because his hockey brain is so good. Would you go Power, Byram on the same power play, and maybe have Byram be on the right side, and then, I mean, then it doesn't leave you anybody else for the other power play. Maybe you can, you know, I don't know if you want, who would you want to throw there? I mean, is Ryan Johnson a power play guy? Could he be a power play two guy if you wanted to try him? Like, I don't know if he'll be dressed tonight. He hasn't been called up yet, and there's still a roster spot available. So maybe he's there, maybe he isn't. But I'm just saying, would you try somebody like him on a second unit?
So to go back to my comment about motion on the power play, and like Johnson, he's really good at walking the line and getting simple shots through. But if you're looking for more motion on your power play, I would try Ryan Johnson. To go back to Byram Power, your question about that, I'm definitely willing to try that because of the mobility, and because we've seen Bowen Byram and other, I don't care if it was back in the WHL or when he was in Colorado, that was another power play that moved at the top, a lot of rotation. I'm for anything right now. I like both Power and so first of all, Power's got great hockey IQ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can get more out of that hockey IQ when you have a man advantage and more space to work with. Byram, I just like his mobility. So I'd be willing to try what you said. I think that's actually not a bad idea at all. Have two defensemen out there that can move the way they do.
Yeah. No confirmation yet on which defenseman will be in the lineup for the Sabres. But Marty, do you remember our first broadcast this year of a preseason game against Pittsburgh? And I sarcastically started the intermission report saying, we have a controversy already. Henry Jokiharju, power play one, right?
Yeah.
They had the awesome start. He was PP1 because Dahlin was injured. And I'm like, this is great. So hearing you guys talk about who should be on the second, I'm like, hello? I'll put Henry out there if he's playing. That's the thing. I don't know who's playing at this point in time. These are all valid questions and concerns because there has been so much in the way of changes nightly to try to get out of this slide. Marty, like, what do you think is the best option right now?
Well, look, the Sabres have 7D, 8 if you consider Dahlin, and then you know, Ryan Johnson did play, you know, before the Levi call up, but they had to make a roster move, and we were kind of wondering what that roster move was going to be, right? Leading up to Sunday's game in Toronto, that ended up being Ryan Johnson. So I think it's been a hard start to the season for Henry Yarkiariou. And I don't know that he's played his best hockey either. And then you combine that with the penalties that he took in the Toronto game. And you're like, okay, well, I don't see Henry being a guy that, oh yeah, like we'll give you that other shot when there's extra defenseman. And I know. I'm just saying, like, I just don't see it. And really, like, there's a lot riding on this game here. And it's a Tuesday game in Montreal, but with the way that the games have been played and the fact that Montreal beat you in the stretch of 10 now loss, Montreal was one of those games that you had wrapped up and you let go. And you know, with the Colorado, the Detroit, the Toronto, there's four examples out of 10 games that you had wrapped up and let go. That's a big game. So I think those roster decisions are going to be very important, not just on the back end, but trying to figure out your lines and who's going to play. Like last game, you had McLeod playing on the right wing with Malenstein and Krebs. Is McLeod, because Greenway is doubtful, going to play with Kulik and Zucker? Is that who's playing center? There's so much riding on that roster right now. That's a big question mark.
Would you put Beck Malenstein, like reimagine that third line with Kulik? Would you put Malenstein up there to bring the energy? And kind of, like, we've seen teams reimagine their line construction. Marchment plays up sometimes the lineup in Dallas. McMahon played up in the lineup when they were a little shorthanded up in Toronto. Would you do like a Malenstein? You know, you're not putting him up in your top six. Would you play that speed and energy to open things up for Kulik, Zucker? Would you do something like that? Maybe because is he your closest thing you have to Greenway?
But then that, I think the biggest thing when you play the Montreal Canadiens is, number one, you got to be disciplined. They Caulfield on the power play, now Lining on the power play. You can't, like, Caulfield scored two on the power play that 7-5 loss, right? You can't have that be a focal point. So you want to be aggressive, but you can't take penalties. And their bottom six, their forwards group in Montreal, their bottom six, I don't think gives you much and not a lot of speed. So yeah, I could see Malenstein maybe being that guy. But Lindy has always liked the Malenstein, Krebs, and either Lafferty or Obi Kubel, and has relied on that kind of go-to a little bit. So I think you're more likely to see a McLeod with Zucker and Kulik than seeing a Malenstein there.
Bakes, we're going to take a break.
Kind of curious.
Yeah. Well, one last comment from you. Give us your vision of how tonight unfolds, or who stars, or whatever.
I had one other crazy thought going back to the power play for Marty real quick. This will be my final thought. Okay, you want to put Byram and Power out there together? Hear me out. Would you put Power in front of the net on the power play? Big body. We saw Greenway go and take the eyes away from the goaltender in his first game back. They don't have enough guys. But Duffer and I were talking about that earlier. Yes, Chara style. Exactly. You've seen it.
Producer Jeff says Chara style, but we remember Rasmus Ristolainen doing that often with the Sabres. And he said, I did that in juniors a lot. And they were struggling on the power play, and he actually scored or had some success right away. And then, well, not so much after, but still, that's maybe a boost that you need. But then who are the other three forwards, Bakes? So if you have Power and Byram, you have Kulik, Thompson, and who there?
Zach Benson all day long. Scrambling around the ice, scooping up pucks, kicking them to the guys that can just throw it to the net. I love it all day.
Bakes, lots to discuss, especially in the coming weeks as the World Juniors ramp up. Thank you for stepping in today. We'll talk to you soon. All the best. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, my friend.
Happy holidays, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Chris Baker, Sabres Prospects. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Maximizing our time with Marty. That's what we're calling this final segment here, as he was, better late than never. We anticipated your delayed start, but Marty, if Sabres Live were, pardon the interruption, and the late portions of the show provide corrections to misstated facts, the loss to Montreal earlier this year was not part of this current 10-game. They went on a run.
No, it was before that. You're right. Yeah.
They won four out of five right after that. So, yes.
Yeah, they lost, and then they ended up going on the West Coast, swept a California trip, and then came back to lose to Minnesota, Vancouver, New York Islanders, and so on and so forth. Yes. Mm-hmm. But you know what? We just talked about Rasmus Dahlin, and he's not going to play tonight. He's hopeful for Friday. Mm-hmm. Like, the Sabres, out of this 10-game losing streak, lost three games with Dahlin in the lineup.
Yep.
The Minnesota game was a really good game. The Vancouver game, they lost in OT. Connor Garland scores in OT. They got a point. And the Islanders game wasn't a great game, but they were up 4-1 to Colorado when he was hurt. And then after that, they lost, seven. So is it a big part of this? Yes. Is it a reason for saying, hey, it's okay to lose 10. No, it's not. It's never okay. But Dahlin's a big part of that, and they weren't able to overcome that loss the way that they did with Tage Thompson when he missed five games and they went 4-1.
You don't miss much, and you had a different vantage point on Sunday as analyst next to Dan. You're doing the same tonight in Montreal, filling in for Razor. So what's the takeaway of all the different forward combinations that you witnessed the other night, and what we're likely to see against Montreal this evening, and which group should we really be looking at as the likely difference makers tonight? Everybody, Marty, keeps saying, this is a big game, whether it's players or coaches, or obviously from an ownership standpoint too, right?
So, and Montreal thinks it's a big game too. Like, I mean, there you got to, Montreal got spanked 9-2 by the Pittsburgh Penguins two games ago. They were down 3-2, like with 5 minutes into the third period, and then they gave up six goals and they lost to Winnipeg. So it's a big game. I'll say this, like, now with Jordan Greenway being doubtful, I expect, Obi Kubel comes back in. We see Malenstein, Krebs, Obi Kubel, probably McLeod comes up and plays, what was a third line that I thought had some good looks in Toronto with Kulik, Zucker, and Greenway. And now Greenway's not looking like he's going to go, so you try to fit McLeod there. The one thing I saw in Toronto, Duffer, is second period, I believe it was, Toronto had a minute 50 on the ice. They were tired. They iced the puck. The Sabres had a faceoff in the offensive zone, and they lost the draw, and they backed off. Everybody backed out, and they allowed Toronto to just have an easy out and get a change. And I feel like that's the thing. Like, the Sabres cannot back off at any moments in any game. Even, pull your goalie, you get a face-off, you lose it. I feel like everybody backed off, and then Toronto scored an empty net goal. Like, you cannot back off. I think that's the number one thing.
What else? I mean, Dahlin is close. So does that help in any way? Like, is there any sense that there's something positive around that the guys can just, take?
He looked good. He looked good, but it doesn't help tonight. It doesn't help tonight. And until he's on the ice, it will not be helping.
Well, you will be in the booth with Dan. Pat Coletta is going to be alongside with us for our pregame coverage starting at 6:30 tonight. We'll see you then.